Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I'm John Batchelor with Eric Berger, the senior staff writer at Ars Technica, most importantly, the author of the new book, Reentry, SpaceX, Elon Musk, and the Reusable Rockets That Launched a Second Space Age. This is volume two in Eric's chronicling of the trip to Mars. To anticipate, in the first book, we got to the launch from Kwajalein Island. It's an elaborate story, but on the fourth try, rolling the dice with the last of the money, they satisfy the demands of NASA and launch into orbit Falcon 1. One engine, the Merlin engine. Older version. Now we're going to go to Musk's idea, which is 9 Merlins in a booster. And in the summer of 2009... there's a whole crew of young people who enjoy partying and the demands of a Texas summer with crickets and rattlesnakes and heat and squalls. And they are getting ready for the first stage to go to Florida. What is it that they have to do that summer to prepare the first stage? How are they working this, Eric?
Well, they have kind of the first stage, the booster. They have the engines, but there's so much more that goes into a rocket than just kind of the outward appearance, right? You've got all of the guts in it, the computers, the flight computers that help the vehicle fly. Because once a rocket launches, no one is controlling the flight of that rocket. It's making all of the calculations on its own. You've got to wire up all of the plumbing to get the propellant from the liquid oxygen and liquid kerosene tanks down to the engines. You've got all of the electrical connections running up and down the vehicle. And just putting that all together for the first time, I mean, this was a much more complex rocket than any of the engineers had worked on before at SpaceX. And so it was just a long, hot summer, and the people who were there described it as the hardest they'd ever worked at SpaceX, which is really, really saying something, because they certainly put people through the ringer at that company. But it was the kind of thing where you take, you know, one step forward and two steps back, because you put something, you assemble something, you test it, you find a problem, you try to change it, and you just continually find test problems and try to get to the solution of something that actually works.
Yes, 100-hour weeks are typical at SpaceX when you're crashing a project, and that this project was the beginning. We're going from one engine to 9 Merlins in something called an octaweb. What was that, Eric?
Well, the octaweb was the design to basically house 9 engines, because each of these engines is a separate inferno, right? I mean, they're burning hot, but you want to make sure that the thrust from one doesn't, you know, come over to another. And I mean, you know, most vehicles at that time, most rockets had 1, 2, or maybe 3 main engines, and so, you know, going to 9 engines was not unprecedented, but it was certainly a challenge from an engineering standpoint, especially for a U.S. vehicle, which had never seen that kind of thing before.
However, this is a commercial company, a private company. They can't command what NASA can command to move parts of its projects from one coast to another. Most famously, they flew this shuttle before it was retired on the back of a 747. SpaceX has no 747. They don't have a ship. All they have is a very large trailer, very large trailer, very wide trailer, to drive from McGregor, Texas, to Cape Canaveral to launch eventually the Falcon 9. It is a road trip from Hades, and Eric, you describe it brilliantly, especially when they crashed into a building. How did they do that?
Well, you had a rocket sticking off the back of a truck. So this was not just a wide load. It was a load that was far taller than any of the bridges on an overpass could accommodate, and it was longer, significantly longer than a typical semi-trailer. So they had to take byways and back roads in from Texas to Florida, and they ran into the most problems in Louisiana. They spent a lot of time south of Interstate 10, which if you've ever driven in that area, you know that the roads kind of are twisting and turning. And obviously, when you've got a super long vehicle, it's very hard to make sharp turns, and so you know, it happened that the end of the rocket was sticking off the back of the truck, and they were trying to make a tight turn into town, and they ran into the interstage of the rocket into a building.
Yes, they crashed into a building. In addition to everything else going wrong, at this point you say, yeah, we're not going to get to Mars this way. However, they do reach Florida. The first thing they do is vacuum the crickets out of the first stage. We're launching into space with crickets, as dead crickets, as passengers. Now we come to the spring of 2010, and Elon Musk is an impatient man. Remember, this is about Mars. This isn't about proving himself to NASA. However, there's some rules to launch from Florida, and one of them is you have to satisfy the 45th, I think it's the 45th Space Wing.
Yes.
It commands the launch facilities, and you have to have a terminator. That is, you're going to able to blow your rocket up. And then you've got to come to the day of, and I love this first opportunity. Do I say correctly? There was a twister, there was a thunderstorm, mm-hmm. and there was a window to launch, or they weren't going to have the power to get into orbit. Was that all that correct?
So what happened is there was a big storm on the day before the launch. And they were unable, after the thunderstorm, some water got into the upper stage of the rocket, and it fried some of the antennas that the second stage of the rocket uses to communicate back to the ground. And it's pretty important to be able to talk to your second stage after a rocket lifts off. So they went out that night, essentially opened up the second stage, and took a glorified hairdryer to these antennas to try to dry them out, to see if they can improve the telemetry or communications with the second stage from ground control. And so the next morning they were getting ready for the countdown, and the telemetry was a little bit better, but it was still dropping in and out. And everyone kind of assumed that was going to be a no-go, and they kind of did this, you know, call with Elon where they went around the room and said, you know, is there any reason, you know, the flight director thinks we shouldn't go? Is there any reason that, you know, the propulsion thinks we shouldn't go, and so on around the room? And like a couple of the people said they were pretty concerned about the antenna telemetry, and Elon Musk heard all this and said, well, I'm not hearing any reason why we shouldn't go. So they went ahead with the launch attempt in early June of 2010.
And it was successful enough so that Elon could sell it to NASA. That was the goal, to move the story, correct?
That was the goal, yes. I mean, if you think about it, at the time, no private company with private funding, largely private funding, had built a medium lift rocket like this before. And so it was pretty impressive what SpaceX did right out of the gate with this rocket. Now today it's a little more commonplace because of the commercial space industry that's launched, but this was 14 years ago. So it was very impressive that they were able to put that vehicle into orbit, and it set the stage. It showed NASA that here was a private company with a rocket that could potentially deliver supplies and cargo to the International Space Station.
And that is the new thing in 2010, the new thing for NASA, for the Obama administration, and for Musk's vision of Mars, because it needs to be funded. Somebody's got to pay for this. It's a private company. It's not a public company. And the funding comes from government contracts. Eric Berger is the author. Re-entry is the book, SpaceX, Elon Musk, and the Reusable Rockets That Launched a Second Stage. Falcon 9, early edition, now exists. But what are you going to earn money about while you're waiting for contracts? We're turning next to a spaceship. Well, actually, a spacecraft.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Having MG can make cooking difficult, but over the years, I've found some really helpful tools and tips that I'm excited to share. Hi, I'm Alicia. I think cooking should always be fun, creative, and of course, delicious. These black bean burgers are hearty, full of flavor, and MG friendly. You're gonna love them.
Check out Alicia's Black Bean Burger cooking video and other recipes full of tips and tricks for managing common MG symptoms while cooking only at mg-united.com.
Ready? Let's cook.